put the kettle on. It's time for some effing tea. Here's your host, Kirsten Gentle.
Welcome to FTNA's Effing Tea Time, a podcast and video series aimed at keeping the industry connected and updated. With the increase in the number of builders collapsing, such as Porter Davis, and the real possibility that frames and trusses could potentially be uncovered and left in the weather for months, we thought it was a good time to discuss best practices for caring for your timber products. Timber is a natural product. This means that exposure to changes in temperature, moisture, sun, and wind can alter the product's moisture content and stability, so it is very important to store the product correctly. FTMA, in conjunction with the Nailplate Engineers, Timber Queensland, and other experts in the industry, created a flyer titled Best Practices for Caring for Your Timber Products, with the purpose of frame and truss manufacturers using it to educate builders on how to best care for their timber products. We felt it was important to remind builders that having received and inspected their frames and trusses, the responsibility of caring for these quality products and keeping them fit for purpose handed over to them. Unfortunately, too many builders pressure fabricators to do the rectification works on jobs left in the elements for too long. In my opinion, it's like buying a loaf of bread, leaving it on the bench for a few months, and then complaining to the baker that it's stale. It's absolutely ridiculous. One newspaper report on the Porter Davis collapse had a quote from a reporter and homeowner stating, "Lucky the pair opted for a steel frame, which means that it is unlikely to rot while they sort out a new builder and while it likely sits untouched for months. One good thing we've got for us," says the builder, "is we decided we weren't going to build this house out of timber. It's made out of steel. At least we now know our house is going to be okay." This is an absolute load of rubbish. And I, for one, am sick of the biased reporting and lack of understanding, as no matter whether your frames are steel or timber, you must take care to protect them from the long exposures to the element. Timber may rot, steel rusts. For the frame and truss manufacturers supplying builders who have gone bust, they are also left with completed jobs, and they too must ensure that these products are protected from the elements. So what can frame and truss manufacturers, builders and homeowners do to care for their quality timber products? Today we are joined by three engineers to discuss further. We have Tim Rossiter from Mitek, David Zhang from Multinail, and Nick Q from Prida. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks, Kirsten.
So as we know, timber is Mother Nature's gift to humanity and is one of the world's best environmental building products. But being a natural product, as I've mentioned, means that exposure to changes in the elements can impact the product's moisture content and stability. So Tim, if we start at the beginning with the delivery, can you explain how trusses should be unloaded and stored on a building site when delivered?
The idea is to keep them under as little stress as possible. So deliver them flat, keep them off the ground. If they're going to be on site for an extended period of time, chuck a tarp over the top so they're not going to get drenched with water, wetting and drying. If you keep that standard conditions, the timber will work perfectly. Now, when I say flat, if you've got a slightly sloping site, I don't expect you to prop them up horizontal. Just have them follow the ground. But if you have a hump in the site, don't let the trusses bow over that hump. In some states, the requirement is to deliver to top plate. If that's the case, prop the trusses on the top plate so they are flat. So if they overhang too far over the external wall, put some propping to hold them flat. If it's over a large room internally, put some propping in there again to hold them flat. Flat, straight, keep them protected from the weather, keep them off the ground, and your timber will perform perfectly.
Fantastic. So, Nick, once the frame and trusses have been stood, how long can they be actually exposed for? Is there a guide?
Well, that's a hard question to answer, actually, and you might get different answers depending on who you ask. It can actually depend on many different factors, such as seasonal variations, periods of extreme rainfall, and then followed by periods of hot weather. But as a general sort of rule of thumb, we work on roughly about a two-month exposure where you're generally not expected to see any significant impact on the framing, and especially if this occurs in the sort of warmer winter months with very little rainfall. The chances of actually weathering becoming more prominent is around that sort of 2 to 7 month period where an inspection may actually be needed, especially if early signs of nail plate withdrawal can be found on the actual site, which is, you know, one of the more prominent problems. Otherwise, mold growth on the wall frames is another one to watch out for. Beyond that sort of 7 to 8 month exposure period, there's a very high chance of actual issues occurring, such as the nail plate withdrawal, as I mentioned earlier. And in some cases can actually lead to, you know, full replacement rather than going down the remedial works. A detailed inspection is definitely required within this sort of a sort of period, and not just for the obvious, you know, nail plate withdrawal and mold issues, but more so for looking at the retention levels of moisture in the timber, which could lead to distortion and other issues like excessive deformations if left unchecked. As far as a guide is concerned, FDMA collaborated together with MyTech Multinail and Prida to produce a best practice document on caring for your timber products. This not only includes recommendations on these exposure periods I mentioned, but also a great deal of other information on what to do, what not to do when it comes to protecting trusses and frames. So definitely a good one to read.
Fantastic. Tim, you had something to add there?
Just to add to that, when timber is left out in the weather and it goes grey, that's not a deterioration of strength. Greying timber is not a deterioration of the strength of the material. It's just the UV rays. So be aware that just because the timber's grey doesn't mean it's now no good.
Oh, that's a great point. So, David, if there is nail plate back out, if it's been, you know, if we're talking about Port of Davis, if no one picks up their jobs and the frames and trusses are stood and uncovered for a period and there is back out, what can builders or homeowners do to rectify that?
Yeah, that's interesting. So when nail plates start to back out from the timber cords or webs, actually their tooth pickup capacity will decrease dramatically. It is not very recommended for the homeowner to fix or repair those roof trusses. We would recommend to engage with a licensed builder. So the builder shall contact the truss manufacturer to find out whether a structural engineer from the nail plate supplier or a qualified structural engineer in the timber industry need to be engaged, so to determine how to rectify those trusses. Rule of thumb, if the nail plates has been identified being withdrawn less than 2 millimeter, we recommend to press those nail plates back by a portable hydraulic presser or hammer the hardwood timber block first, and then reinforce those nail plates with a specified amount of screws on each member, depending on the type of joints or type of roof trusses. However, if we identify the withdrawal amount is more than 2 millimeter, or there's any significant withdrawal on a major girder truss, they have to be reinforced with material like structural plywood cassettes, or sometimes we also call out the prefabricated templates to reinforce the local joints on both sides of the timber.
Thank you, David. And Tim, is there anything else that homeowners or builders can do, you know, if they do see the nail plate back out, or anything else that they can do to protect their frames and trusses to avoid that back out?
The best way is just to keep them stable. So constant dry, no wetting and drying cycles. As Nick said, extended periods of no rain is not really a big problem. But if you have short periods, thankfully not coming into summer, if you have the thunderstorm pattern of summer where it's hot and then wet and then hot and then wet, that's really the time in which the timber shrinks and grows and pushes the nail plates back out again. So your best bet is simply to keep them protected from the weather. Your first port of call should always get the roof cover, because once you've got the roof covered, you're going to protect the frames over a great deal from vertical rain anyway. Then it's a matter of protecting the walls and the floor system. Particle board floors do not like to get wet. It's just a general rule of thumb. So if you can get some wrapping around the structure, it's not recommended to wrap it tight with a sealed envelope. If you have a fully sealed plastic bag, then you're going to get moisture ingress, you're going to get condensation. That's the sort of environment where you're going to generate mold. So you want something that's going to breathe. So whether you use a breather foil or whether you just leave some gaps down at the floor level so that the air can pass through. Ideally, if you have a light shower on timber, the best thing is for the wind to come through and just dry it out again rather than have it sealed up like a bag. So keep it protected. Avoid the nail plate back out by trying to avoid that variation in moisture content. And just a note about that, when you repress the nail plates back into home again, they're back to pretty much full capacity. There's no detriment to pushing it back into the timber. The only reason they come out in the first place is just that swelling and shrinking of the timber as it wets and dries, which forces the plates back out again. But once they're pressed back into place, all is good and they're back to full capacity.
So, Tim, is there any different with steel?
No. The recommendations for the steel frames are exactly the same. Keep them dry. Don't let them get moist. You read the steel frame literature from BlueScope and others, and it says exactly the same thing. Keep the frames protected. I think their term is wind-blown salt and wind-blown moisture. So steel has its own problems. It also is going to be affected by being left in the weather. So it wouldn't matter what framing material you're using. You're going to need to protect it from extended periods of exposure.
And FTMA has looked at things such as storm seal, and we'd encourage homeowners to talk to their insurance company. You know, you could look at a cost of around $2,500 just for materials to wrap your house and protect it for longer periods, and that's cheap for insurance companies to do. So there are options out there.
Yep, definitely.
So, Nick, throughout Australia, especially in the northern states, there's been a lot of issues with the mould that was mentioned before. So what happens if your frame and trusses get actually mould on them? Is there anything that you can do?
That's a great segue, and actually we could have a whole podcast on this topic, you know, going from anything from the actual mould, different colours, growth characteristics, and all number of different fascinating attributes. But let's just stick to the main key points. So firstly, it shouldn't come as a surprise that mold can be a real health hazard if it's allowed to grow, especially black mold, and which typically would flourish in the wall cavities. The cost of sort of addressing mold at a later stage can definitely add up, especially if you have to pull plasterboard off the walls to access, you know, certain areas in order to treat the mold. So it's always recommended to address the issues as soon as any signs of growth are encountered. The ideal conditions for mold sort of depends on the right temperature, humidity, and of course, the largest factor is moisture levels in the timber. This permits, you know, further growth as the mold feeds off the simple sugars present in the wood. Some types of mold can actually grow at levels even as low as 16% under the right conditions. But again, sort of the average is around that 19% moisture content level. So it's not uncommon to for mold to have to cycle through periods of growth, then become dormant, then active again when sort of the conditions are more favorable. Especially prolonged growth at 90% or higher levels can eventually lead to timber decay, and this is definitely something we would, you know, want to avoid at all costs. So as far as treatment, how do you deal with this? So the minor growth of mold removal could be as simple as brushing or cleaning off the mold, provided that we keep the moisture levels in the timber as 15% or lower, the sort of aim that we want to get to. And the quicker the building envelope can be made weathertight, the better off it's going to be. So the use of mild detergents such as bleach or vinegar or oxalic acid-based solutions can definitely help with more heavier growth areas. And especially there are many products out in the market that are specifically formulated to deal with mold that can sort of be used to treat minor to moderate cases. But when you get to sort of really severe cases, it's always best to engage a professional mold cleaning and removal company. And there are actually companies out there who can do this process and also assist with advice on how to lower moisture content levels, help to dry out the frame, whether that be through natural or mechanical ventilation methods, and also help with preventative measures when needed.
Fantastic. Thank you. So, David, some fabricators who have been caught out by Porter Davis collapse, they've already manufactured the job ready to be delivered and it's in their yard. Obviously, they don't want to dispose of that job because we're hoping there'll be a builder pick up those jobs and continue. So how best can fabricators protect those jobs in their yard?
So ideally, they should be restored in an undercovered area if they do have this luxury option in their factory or in their yard. It's similar to all the other structural components or timber materials and the other engineered wood product. They should be protected from weather by applying a tarp, like Tim mentioned, or a similar waterproof material, by making sure the two ends are always cut off. You leave the airflow to maintain the ventilation. The main thing is to avoid the condensation because nail plates are made from steel. Never place those finished product directly on ground, because if they are not covered, you placed on ground, obviously they're going to be some damage long term if there's a rain coming in. Another thing we can trying to tell them to do is to make sure if there's someone takes over those projects, hopefully, they need to do another round of in-house inspection before deliver to the site, just to guarantee there's no such nail plates back out or decay in timber or a mold happening in the product, just to have these structural components ready to be rebuilt again on site. Yeah.
So, gentlemen, one of you mentioned the other day about if the bottom cord is sitting in water on the flooring, if there's particle board flooring, for example, down and water is swelling, or at a, you know, concrete slab and the bottom cord is on laying in water, is there anything they can do to minimize that water if they can't cover it? Are there any other ways? I think, Nick, was it you mentioning that they could drill small holes in the particle board flooring?
That was actually at a first floor level where the, even the particle board manufacturers actually recommend to drill some small pilot holes to allow the rainwater to, you know, fall through. But as far as a slab is concerned, you can't drill through the slab. So sometimes what you can do is you can drill some small holes through the actual frame itself if you have if the slab is, you know, permits the actual shedding of water in one direction. But I'd love to get everyone else's opinion on what they've done to deal with slabs.
Tim?
Yeah, you're right, Nick. It really comes down to where the water pools. So if particularly upstairs, it's fairly easy to see where the water's ponding in particle board. A quick pilot hole in the middle of that puddle will drain that out pretty well. Same thing goes for slabs. They're rarely level, so it'll pool somewhere. And wherever that pooling happens to be, I agree with your suggestion. If it's pooling up against the side of a bottom plate on one side of the building, a 5mm hole in that bottom plate horizontally is not going to damage the timber detrimentally from a structural point of view, but it'll certainly let the water out. So, and then it's just a matter of maintaining a little bit of a watch and see on those drain holes that you put in. They'll get plugged up with a little bit of dirt or maybe some leaves. So it's not a big job to go through and make sure that drainage is kept clear. This whole situation is a very good example of a pound of prevention prevents a pound of cure. So a little bit of preventative work, not a lot of expense, will save a lot of cost in the long term.
Yeah, agree. Anything to add there, David?
I think they both spotted a very important thing. Is all we're trying to do is try not to pound the water in a specific location. So a bit like people using roof gutters, you know, you try to direct water to somewhere. But well, one thing we do need to mention to the builders is that it will involve a lot of ongoing visits to those sites. Like even if you do today, it's not guaranteed you can leave as it is for next 3 months or 4 months. So if you do want to maintain a good structure, you do need to visit those sites regularly on maybe 1 month period of time. You need to go back and check. Or the homeowner actually can, if I don't know legally they can go in or not. So yeah.
Yeah, Nick?
Yeah, can I just add to that? Following on what Tim mentioned about preventative measures, it's actually surprising how lazy people can be.
Yeah.
Often when we go out to site and we go and inspect these kind of issues, you sort of ask the question, why don't you just drill a hole through the particle board? Why don't you drill a hole through the frame to, you know, alleviate the water from the slab? And it's just amazing something as simple as that, it just is sort of neglected. And so if anyone's listened to this, even if it's a property owner, definitely don't be afraid to do some of these preventative measures. It's definitely going to go a long way, because if you have to try and rip out the bottom plate to, you know, to fix problems later on, it's a much, much more costly exercise.
And Tim, will they have access to the site? That's what I'm a bit unsure of, because if they're locked out of the site, according to the media reports I've seen, they're locked out of the site. So if builders or homeowners can't get to there, what should they be doing?
Well, I was going to actually add some caution to all of our advice, and that is don't go on site if you're untrained.
Yes.
Getting injured on site is worse than a damaged house. So don't be crawling around on your frames and trying to do things on your own bat. Get professional trades in to do that work for you. As far as access is concerned, you're really going to have to deal with your own legal department. The legalities of who owns what partway through a build when there's been some progress payments made by the financial institutions is muddy at best. So be guided by your legal position. Don't be tempted to go on site unassisted or unaccompanied. I would expect that some of the temporary fencing that was around those sites is no longer around those sites, because there are businesses out there would like to be recovering some of their stuff as well. So I'm suspecting there's some safety issues on the horizon. So let's not add to those by encouraging people to wander around with power drills, drilling holes in things and cutting holes in stuff that'll then drop them through the floor. So I'm not encouraging people to run around and punch holes in stuff on their own cognizance, but do get a trade involved. It isn't a difficult thing to do, but it does require someone with a trade background or some trade experience to do it.
And especially for the insurance as well.
From an insurance and a legal point of view, yes. you could imagine that an unscrupulous insurance company would say, well, now you've modified the frame, the insurance is void. So, yeah, be very, very wary about what you take on your own bat. However, there are preventative measures that can be taken. They're not difficult. So find that happy middle ground where you can get the right people to do the right job for you and stay safe.
That's absolutely great advice from all three of you. We truly thank you. It's a very difficult time out there for homeowners. We would encourage homeowners to follow up with their insurance companies, talk about possibility of looking at storm seal. We will put some information for homeowners to look to. And thank you very much, gentlemen. We truly appreciate your help in making sure that builders and homeowners know how to care for their timber products. Thank you.
You're very welcome. No problem at all.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kirsten. Thank you.
We hope the tips provided by our three engineers help fabricators, builders and homeowners better care for their timber products. Whether builders have left steel or timber frames and trusses exposed, action needs to be taken to ensure they continue to be fit for purpose products. As stated, we believe homeowners should be reaching out to their insurance companies to explore the options of wrapping their house to protect the structure if it is expected to stand uncovered for months on end. It is also important to remember that a building site is a construction site and no one should be on the site unaccompanied by a professional. Please remember that safety is paramount. If you'd like further information on best practices for caring for your timber products, please email us at editor@ftmanews.com. That's editor@ftmanews.com, and we will send you further information. We send our condolences to all those homeowners, builders, tradies and fabricators caught out by yet another collapse and hope this podcast helps you in caring for your timber products. Thanks for listening to another F&T Time. Until next time, catch ya.